Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming back at you live in person here Thursday, July the 8th, 2021. And this is the 80th birthday of legendary pro wrestler, civil rights activist, union labor leader, and really one of the last historians of an era in the professional wrestling business that does not exist anymore. You know, Thunderbolt, just based on age, the wrestling business has a stigma of people dying young.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them did. A lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the history is being lost in a way because so many people died in their 30s, 40s, 50s. So to be here at 80, you're one of the last. I can't even think now of anybody else who was a main event person who's 80 years old who's still around.
Well, I haven't been out there enough to know who's still out there. And I probably don't know too many of them out there now because I had no involvement. I mean, all of those places where they had been set for years to make money and for older individuals to participate and be around the fans and whatever, to make money, and I was just kind of pushed out of all of that, out of sight, out of mind, no way to make any type of living in the wrestling industry.
A lot of people talk of Ric Flair, and Ric Flair, I think, at this point is just 70, so you've got 10 years on him.
Well, I mean, but he had the top ring for what, 30, 40 years or so.
What was it about him, in your opinion?
Listen to Ole. Ole tells the whole story. I mean, when you see Ric Flair one time, you see it all. It's over and over and over. And there was a part that Rick was North NWA World Champion, and there was no champion at all. But he still believed, you know, in it.
You know, that's interesting, because one of the claims on these videos on YouTube that somebody makes of you, I can't remember if it was Cornette or Bill Eady, but they said you believed you were the champion, and that's why it was hard to get a belt off of you.
No, they don't even know how to even put it. Believed I was the champion. People have told me that I was the people's champion, and all I ever wanted was to be the world's champion. If they had wanted me to be, I would have been. And if they, I always went along with whatever they done. I tried to be a team player, but when the money funny, and the individuals are jealous or envy or what have you, I just took care of myself, because what none only thought they had of me was drawing some money when they needed someone to draw money.
How was it in the early 90s? You came back for a little bit in the era of Ted Turner.
Mm-hmm.
How did that all happen? Now, this is all after Morton Downey.
All this was Ole. All this was only was the area was, you know, go down or whatever, and they need a shot, and I would always draw people.
Now, when he called you, that would have been about 91, 92.
Well, see, there was a time when all of that that was during that time was in Georgia Championship Rally, WCW, see, all them things was changed. All those were different business. I think that WCW, that was Ole's business, I believe. And There was that war, they didn't know nothing about.
So Ole calls you up in the early 90s. This is after Morton Downey. This is after the 80s. This is after the Crocketts are out at this point. What does he say to you?
Come work.
Now, does he want you to wrestle? Does he want you to agent? Does he want you...
Oh, no. I never was offered any type of position. No type of position at all. I've always wanted to be a booker. I'm a dope upper, you know. If you're not ownership, you know, we talk about this a lot of times. Communication, ownership, you know, and equal opportunity. And I had all of those credentials to do what all of those great, there were great promoters, there are great wrestlers, and little old me just was one that I could have fitted in real good, but they just didn't want me.
So when they in 92, you would have been 51. Mm-hmm. When they call you, what do they want you to do? When Ole called you?
Well, they was getting ready for the Slammerie. That was the first one, I believe.
It might have been.
The first one. Right. With Bob Armstrong, was supposed to be my partner, and his son took it. Well, and also, see, Bill Watts was in the office at that time, too. And... it's amazing, man, how they was having the at the Omni, they was having the, just like they do all the first fest. I mean, where the fans meet the wrestlers and autographs and so forth and so on. But all of that transaction, every one of those individuals, they bought into that building. They bought them in through the camera wing. They took me all the way around the back and put me back on the back side. Well, didn't nobody see me until they wanted somebody to see me. I mean, they have their stuff together.
You did the Slamboree show, but you did stick around because you did some shows where you were in a corner and Ole was in a corner, and then you were with Ice Train for a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Well, all of that was that time. Ole was trying to give me a job. You know, Ice Train went in and made his deal without me. Go back to the Jim Cornette show. I'm not the Maudie Darling show. About Herschel Walker, Tony Dorsett. I mean, you should have done this, you should have done that. Da, 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 da. And... that was right around the time that Bill Watts dropped an N word on Hank Aaron. Do you remember? Mm. You understand? And Bill was supposed to be a friend of mine. And at that whole time, I had a group home. And I took all my boys to the show. And they bought... If they had let me take the Steiners and keep going, we could have went so far. But that's when Eric Bischoff was moving in. And Ice Train went in, got his little piece of pennies by himself without me. And so I went in and I asked... Bischoff for a job. Bischoff told me I was too old. Bischoff told me, said, what can you do for this business? And I think I cussed him out and walked out. So that was a ridiculous answer, a question. I mean, I draw more money here than anybody have been here. So, I mean, just was, yeah, they pushed me on. That's when the big money, Lex Luger, was the first one to get $750,000. And it's amazing. At that same time, Ole offered me $150 for a taping. And I think that's the only time I told Ole to go somewhere. You understand what I'm saying? Because the money was there and it was starting that. And I wish, I know Ole cared about me because of my drawing money and about whatever, but I wished that Ole would, at that time, would have took me as his assistant booker or something, because, I mean, that's what I do. That's what I know to do. And then all of those individuals that they put on afterwards, five and six guys on board, didn't know nothing at all about wrestling. I asked for the position, asked for numerous of times, but never got any cooperation of not even listening to about a booker. You know, during that time is when the big boy, that Jody Hamilton, put out, I was hard to get along with, my own worst enemy.
So at this point, where do you go when that ends?
I had a group home working with youth, and then before that I was also labor, you know, working with for trying to get that minimum wage up, things like that, you know.
What would you consider that period of your life like, the late 90s, when you're working at the group home and you're still active?
Well, I understood that they didn't want to be bothered with me. You know, I mean, I understood all the things that was in, everything's on record of what they'd have done to different colored people of color. And I fit right into that position, you know. And, I mean, that's all I know was wrestling, you know, trying to help somebody. That old bogus work, that's when it all broke down. I already done all of that. And it was hard for me to believe. I had so many friends, I thought. And no one, you know, no calls at all. Only time I hear from when something was really, really in bad shape, you know.
So when all the Monday night ratings wars are going on, and Ted Turner is against Vince McMahon, and Monday Night Wrestling is drawing tens of millions of people on cable television, was there ever a call at that point from a local promoter?
No.
None?
None.
Now, what do you chalk that up to?
Well, controlling. And you know, the worst thing about that, man, and I had to say this on Martin Downey show, of white man's business. And then that's when all hell broke loose. You know, I have to go back to the Martin Downey show, because shows broke out. Well, I saw them black basketball players. You look here. You there's other people too. Well, that's that old mundane level of thinking. You know, thinking big old me and little old you, not giving you your props. You know, I mean, truth is truth. I ain't done nothing to nobody. I ain't done nothing to him. You know, a lot of those guys, I just wish that I would have known some of the things that they were thinking, and I wish they would have had matches with me. I would have, you know, straightened them out a little bit.
When did the negative things about you start to surface?
When I went to help Ann Gunkle. That's when it started.
Do you wish you hadn't done that now?
No. I don't wish nothing. That everything I done it because I wanted to do it. Did nobody make me do nothing? That's right. I have nobody to blame. I don't blame them. I'm not mad at those people. I mean, I was kind of angry at one time, But I understand now. I don't like their stinking thinking. I don't like the way they do. But I don't hate them. I let them alone.
At this point, when somebody sends you a clip of people talking about you, what do you make of that?
Well, it's deep. It's deep where they make it plain. They say, well, we put these together to for the old wrestlers to be way to make money and keep alive and keep you people up on what's going on. And you listen to all of them. I haven't done anything to any of those individuals. And, I mean, they don't call me, but they all have what they see as bad points about me, and they bring that up in a negative way. And anything that is talked about, my name is the last one to come up in it if it's something decent. But if it's bad, it's altogether different things, see? And I mean, like, a person can put on their Thunderbolt was this and doing no good. I remember that, but then they'll say, "Well, Dusty Rhodes was good," you know, you follow what I'm saying? Change the whole subject, and even those people are supposed to have been fans or with me or whatever. But it's just like the race card when you. When you say something that another individual does not agree with or don't like, then they'll blunt it off and bring up whom? Hey, what is it? The American dream is all about a job, a home, a secure family, and a piece of the rock. You know, and that's all I ever asked for. I wanted to be a part of, and I guess I tried too hard to be a part of pushing myself off on people that don't care nothing about me at all. Just, you know, and so, and then I finally, I got steel, and God is showing me every move that they make.
Now, over the years, you have turned down a lot of opportunity to do what they call shoot interviews.
Oh, yeah.
Where people want to go through your career and then sell the tape.
Yeah.
Now, why have you been adverse to that in the past?
Well, I'm going to do it myself. I can do it myself. Can't nobody tell my story no better than me. I mean, I've heard... do you know how it feels to... I mean, just bluntly lie on to people that... might care a little bit about you, or think discouragement. Discouraging them people. Well, that's a bad man. He didn't do that. Or somebody else is better than this. And that's what a lot of the guys, for whatever reason, it's all about money.
Before the pandemic, you went into the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
How did that call come about?
Oh man, that was. You know, as far as I had almost wrote the wrestling business off. To when I say wrote it off, I turned it all over to God, man. And Mike Mooningham kept me alive. I'm talking about when no one would even hardly speak my name. Mike would always do a clip or something or keep me going. And so Mike called me and told me that they were paying money for tapes that in New York and all. And so I called. I didn't have Gerald's number, so I called. He gave me Jack's number. I called Jack, and Jack gave me Jerry's number. And Jerry told me they wasn't doing that no more. Yeah, and it kind of, you know. And then a few little later on, Mike Mooningham called me and said, "Bo, Gerald wants you to be in the Hall of Fame." You know, I mean, that was the last. That's all I had was. That's all I had between me and wrestling. Me and wrestling and my life, my career life, was Gerald and Briscoe. And I found out that Gerald had been working for years trying to, whatever they do, to get me in there. And that was one of the most honorable days of my life.
Very
being able to accept. And Luthez was... Luthez was my man. Luthez was... Luthez had a bad habit of slapping folks. And so I told Lou, I said, now, Lou, we're going to work. But you slap me tonight, I'm gonna see how good you. Oh, he didn't slap me. I'm glad he didn't, because that would have been a bad night for me.
Whole different story. Hey, go ahead, caller. You're on with Thunderbolt Patterson.
Yeah, Thunderbolt. I got a couple of questions for you, I know that you know all the answers of being in that profession all the time. Was you in junior high, high school, or college? Did you wrestle during those periods of times of your youth growing up? By the way, I was born November 8th, 1941, so you had 4 months ahead of me. So I can relate with my career as an athlete. I started in 52 playing baseball, Little League, when they started that in Marion, and graduated on up to junior high and high school as an athlete in track and basketball and stuff, so on and so forth. But as you, growing up like that, when you was in school as an athlete, or did you just get into the professional wrestling after you got older? I didn't quite catch that on the first segment of that. I was doing some other things right here, but I was trying to do both, and I can't chew gum and walk at the same time. But could you tell me, like, the real wrestling part, and then define what is the difference back in the day? But back in the day when I knew the wrestling, like Buddy Rogers and those guys come on TV on channel WLW in Columbus, people talk, oh, that's fake, that's no good, this or that. I know that some of it was. Some guys that I knew at that age when they was out the Coliseum, they put the floor together and stuff, and they said they'd have boards, so when they slammed you down on the floor, it sounded like it's really hitting hard. But it was a profession. It was a beautiful thing. All of you that was wrestlers would have been stuntmen on all the cowboy shows and all the shows around, because, buddy, you had to be in really great shape. I understand that. But the fake blood, they hit you in the head with a capsule, and the going from rope to rope and hitting each other. Did you do all that? Because I can't recall, but my mother-in-law would have known you very well, and she died at 92. She went to her grave believing that was not fake. And I said, "Well, okay." Can you define that?
I'm so glad you asked that question.
Okay, thank you.
I'm a street man. I wrestled and played football and track till I got to the ninth grade, but they kicked me out. I didn't have too much time to go to school. I was doing other things, fighting in the streets. But when I was 6, 7 years old, my mother sent me to the YMCA, and it was free. And I learned how to wrestle a little bit. But from 1965 up until they put me out, I had the opportunity of wrestling the greatest wrestlers that ever stepped in the ring. And that was like Luthez, Dory Funk Sr., Vern Gagne, Luke Graham, Johnny Valentine. I'm talking about the real, I can't say what I want to say here right now, kickers of the wrestling business, and then come along to find out that the promoters of that change in area of the wartime had individuals that they that did not went to college and done all different times, but never know anything about wrestling at all. They gave them jobs to entertain the fans. That was, I think, that was just a real a swift kick in the backside of wrestling's individuals that changed it to entertainment for so many different reasons. And when the likes of Gerald Briscoe, the likes of Sherman Benjamin, and Danny Hodge, and Kirk, those in and the Steiner brothers, those individuals went to college and trained and sacrificed and was all about wrestling and the wrestling business. They recruited them, and then you're going to take individuals off of the streets or off of the, if I told you, can I tell him what George Scott told me? I mean, Lord, will you forgive me? Can I tell him what George Scott told me?
Well, we are on radio here.
I understand that, but the question that you're asking is a great question, because that question that you asked is the one that the Eric Bischoff, Vince McMahon, took it on themselves to change a great sport of wrestling, of any one-on-one contact that people love and people put pride in and time in to be what they want it to be, and then individuals from off of the streets or pushing a pin gonna come in and I'm gonna let him whoop me? You got to be joking. Do you hear me? Are you asleep?
So I think he hung up to listen to the answer.
Do you understand what I'm saying, though?
Well, you know, and this is the question. Well, and I think this is where the caller was coming in, that he had mentioned that someone went to their grave believing it was real. Mm-hmm. So this is a big question. It's always been the question. So how do you explain that? When somebody comes up to you and says, is it real?
It's a business. It's a business. It's just like football, baseball, anything else. Would you take a nobody or inexperienced person and put on your football team or your basketball team or anything that you're doing if you're trying to win?
No, and this is an important thing as well. What did it do to your body over the years?
Hey, you can see it. I mean, artificial hips, and I mean, my hands is like, man, and my shoulder. I've been beat down. I've been hit everywhere, but under the bottom of my feet. And I mean, you can say what you want to say. At one time, when a person would say it's faking, well, I'd say I will show you. But I'm too old to do that now. And you know, people, as they say, people still going and whatever, even with the acrobats, with the clowns and the things that's going on, you know what I mean? And it's all about that money, but the money is supposed to go to the individual that has paid the dues and that Ken Russell and one of the greatest business has ever been.
Now, obviously, at 80 years old, you can't get in the ring anymore, but do you ever think, do you ever miss that part of it, being in front of the fans?
No, I had my time. The only thing I missed that how they denied the fans. You know, they tried, but they can't hurt me because God has kept me. Regardless, I might not have everything that other people want, but I'm not wanting for nothing. I got a roof, you know, and And I understand how people feel about me. You don't have to tell me.
As time has went on, what have you learned about this business that you didn't know maybe in the beginning?
A heap of crooks.
Yeah.
A bunch of crooks. Bunch of crooks. Bunch of wannabes. Bunch of fat cats that want to control.
What's the, when you watch people wrestling today on shows that come through towns, what's the biggest problem you see?
Don't nobody know how to wrestle. Don't let them, I mean, a show. That's a show. I mean, if you're in a fight, you don't have to ask folks what to do. You don't have to clap your hand. If the people, if you don't have the people, you can't make the people do nothing. I mean, that's drumming up your own business. And ain't doing nothing but clapping your hands.
Yeah.
So it's just deep, man. It's not nothing like it used to be. And more money there, and it's more controlling, you know. And they make monkeys out of who they want to make a monkey out of.
Did you ever get a call from anybody in New York, ever?
No.
Now, what do you chalk that up to?
Well, I mean, see, most people is going by what they hear. They don't. Most people don't know nothing about me. All of these little side people, all of these side shows that even trying to do a little something, if they were serious and wanted to make a mark or something, I'd be right here. I'd be where willing and able to go. But never no call, so you'd have to ask them why. You know, I mean, why? That's a very, very good question. Why? And some of them say, well, I'm your friend. I like what you do. But why? Why didn't you call? I mean, the fans ain't done. I ain't done nothing to nobody. I ain't done nothing to the fans. Me and the fans ain't fell out. I have still, God, just. I might have more fans now than I did then. So time is changing. People are understanding more. And it's getting real. I mean, either you do the right thing or you don't. I ain't got to be bothered with you.
Now, it's interesting because life certainly is not over. It's a birthday today, but that's not the end of anybody's life. And you've got a lot of big things coming up. Now, I would guess that somebody buying a ticket to see a show that you were involved with as maybe a booker or promoter or whatever it would be still would want to see you. As you said, you've got more fans today than you did back then. Now, clearly you can't wrestle today. So what way on camera or in the arena would you want to be involved?
Let me say this here well, before I answer that question. Any and every sport or anything that is, if the old timers don't pass on, or they are either managers, controlling, or general managers, or owners, or lead men, or town men, or agents, or whatever, I haven't been offered none of them. But I did do one thing. When I first got inducted into the Hall of Fame, I did do one thing. I made it clear that I was looking for a job. And I was looking for a general manager job. And you know why I done that? Because of Teddy Long. Don't know nothing about wrestling at all. And what, that's give him a position. I mean, a position, you know. I mean, not, he ain't got no authority or nothing because he don't know nothing. But that's a position that would be a deep position if it was treated and acted right. If that general manager would take that pressure of that owner and do his job and know what he's talking about is a very important position. Just like a field agent taking care of trips on the road. None of those things. But I asked for that just to see the water and what would happen. Nobody responded. I really thought I was going to have an opportunity to go my second home where my baby is, Texas. But then nobody responded. But the first somebody that Vince got rid of, you know who that was?
Mr. Briscoe.
No. Oh, no. No?
No.
No. Brother Long.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
Brother Teddy Long.
He doesn't have a job anymore.
But, oh, yeah. Oh, yes, he's got a job.
Oh, Teddy Long.
Teddy Long is a general manager in Texas.
Oh, is he?
Well,
there you go.
You understand what I'm saying? I said all that to say all of you read between the lines. You understand what I'm saying? Now, No. I don't want no job. I'm going to own it. I got the opportunity and the talent and the know-how. And most of all, I got some good people. I got a friend that's $50,000 that's in the bank right now. Just waiting on the epidemic to end and see. I wouldn't mess up nobody's money because I ain't had nothing to mess up myself. The wrestling business and the higher up, they saw to that. No work, no play. No work, no eat. So you can figure that. And I'm supposed to be a icon, a legend. When I left Waterloo, when I was 23 years old, I knew I was a man. Because they didn't have nothing out there to whoop me if I wanted to fight them. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
And I mean, that was all, that was, none of that was in my favor. Only God brought me through all of that. I ain't no better than nobody else. I mean, any given day, any man can whoop a good man can whoop a good man any day. I mean, any day. I mean, hey. Ain't nobody God. Ain't nobody deep, man. It's really deep. And but all of that. All of that is just some things that had to be. And I understand that it's a whole new day. We're coming out of a whole something that most of you people had never seen before. Or never heard of before. It's more people that died in these last 2 years than all of the wars we've had. So don't you think God is trying to tell you something? Oh, boy.
Now, Terry Tackett has joined us in studio here. He's going to sit down and pull this purple microphone over. Now, Terry, you went to some of these shows down at the Marion Coliseum here, Veterans Memorial, that Thunderbolt was headlining all these many years ago. And now here to sit next to the man on his 80th birthday, and this is the day, 80 years ago today, he was born in Waterloo, Iowa. What do you make of that?
I'm so happy. I'm thrilled to death. And one of my big memories that I'll never forget from the Marion Coliseum was when Thunderbolt Patterson and Ole Anderson were there, and I got to take their stuff back to their dressing room. They chose me out of everybody there. I'll never forget that.
Well, that's a serendipitous moment.
I'm being honest. I got his jacket.
And you stole it. I'm kidding.
And Ole Anderson's jacket. And they chose me. I mean, of course, I'd walk back with security, but I was chosen.
Now, that was a time when Ole had his company, WCW, and we were flying into Dayton, I believe it was. We were doing Columbus. We were doing West Virginia. That was after that war. After they took all the Ole, Ralph Reed, and Fred Ward. Those three regular individuals, Ralph Reed and Fred Ward, was with Paul Jones years and years ago. And they kept it going. And it's amazing. See, things...
And you believe it or not, the other man on the card, your homeboy, Ox Baker.
Look, look.
I got to see two iconic figures that night. More, now, I mean, Ole, and more than that. I mean, you know.
Well, and just to point this out for people who might not know, Ox Baker came here to celebrate his 80th birthday. Was here on the day, and now so is Thunderbolt Patterson.
How many miles apart were they? Were they exactly. born?
And you will be here tonight at the party. I should mention this. I haven't mentioned it this morning.
13 miles.
13 miles
apart.
Terry will be here tonight. From 6 to 8 tonight, we're going to have a birthday party here. You got to have a birthday party on an 80th birthday.
Let me break it on down just a little bit more. When I said, just what you said, all of this was in God's plan. I'm so nervous. I'm nervous and I'm happy. It was in it's God's plan to do this. All of the individuals that say, hey, I'm with you, this or that, or whatever, we stumbled up. Here we are. Total full circle. Total full circle. And God told me, I ain't telling what he told somebody, he told me my latter days was going to be better than them days. I give everything I've had. Shokes say I ain't never had nothing to give. But everything that I did have, I gave it away.
Now I do want to bring this up again. 6 to 8 p.m. tonight. Turn on your radios. And also, if you want to drop by, get a piece of cake. Meet Thunderbolt tonight, 6 to 8 p.m., the big birthday. Terry will be here. Thunderbolt will be here. I'll be here. Angie will be here. We'll be snapping pictures. We'll be doing all kinds of things. Some other station dignitaries will be here tonight.
And a few people did contact me about it.
Well, maybe surprises tonight. Yeah. So it's going to be fun. And I also want to mention, now, Thunderbolt, did you keep any memorabilia? Because I know you're headed to Waterloo after this. Did you bring any memorabilia from your days?
Well, here's what I only have a few things for 56 years. Hmm. And my intention is to do some fundraising for the University Museum of Iowa, my hometown, and also there is a radio station in Waterloo, Iowa, that a gospel station that has been in a little trouble, and I want to try and do what I can to support the museum and that radio station in Waterloo. I was planning, along with the birthday parties, I was supposed to be in other places, but they ended up here. And as I told you earlier, I have a person that is ready to run anywhere I want to go. I'm just trying to wait to do it at the right time when the health people say everything is right, yeah, and all of us get together, and we got to make sure that we follow the plan of, we have the most knowledgeable scientists and people in the world.
Absolutely.
And leaders in the world to be the best of what we do. And that's, I'm following Jesus and good people. I'm so full, I'm about now, to bust.
I got to let the let the audience know that tonight the birthday party will be on 6 to 8 p.m. Glenn Coble's coming up after this. I believe Family Feud. I know everybody loves that. 10 a.m. till 12 noon. And we've got some more things here delivered for Swap Shop. More flyers. So Swap Shop's picking up steam today from 12:10 to 1 p.m. Birthday party for Thunderbolt tonight, 6 to 8 here at the station. And Thunderbolt sticking around tomorrow. He'll be in tomorrow morning with me from 8 until 1 o'clock. And then there might be something big going on tomorrow night. We're going to confirm that as the day goes along before Thunderbolt heads off to Waterloo to get another well-deserved honor.
And like you were saying, this guy, it's, what I'm going to do is raffle. I got some real things to people might want.
That'd be fun. Help.
Ready? We have to have true and honest reporting. We got to stand up for the great wrestlers.
No matter that what has it is, made. I'm the first one in on the raffle. So.
You understand? Well,
let me say this. Man, I got a tailor-made suit. I maybe paid $800-$900 for it. Mm-hmm. I got a deal.
Now,
you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
I mean, just this, that, I got
There's only one way to wrap up this 80th birthday show on this day, and back me up before I do this, Terry. Who is the greatest talker in the history of professional wrestling?
I'm sitting right beside
there. There you go.
So
Thunderbolt, talk into that blue mic or green microphone right before we wrap up the show. Give me an 80th birthday Thunderbolt Patterson promo.
Thank God for Jesus. Thank God that I'm in Marion, Ohio. I've had a lot of people say, yeah, we will. But it's happening today, now. And then I'm heading on to home. And from now on, I'm running from Ohio to Iowa to Texas, from Iowa to Ohio, back and forth. I love you. Get your mind together. Renew your mind. And do your own self and lay down all of that thinking.
There you go.
Love you.
For Thunderbolt Patterson, Terry Tackett, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Oh, my God. WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just